This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Indigo Wisdom, A Personal Journey. The author, Susan Topping. And Susan joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Sue.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. Now, you're going to take us on a journey, an emotional journey, concerning your son, concerning your life, concerning the things you've learned together with him spiritually, and ways that you never, ever would have believed when you first had this child. But let's say, I kind of set the stage. Let me read a few things you have written in general, and then we'll get into all the details. You say this: when Susan Topping launched her motherhood career, she was not anticipating the angst and turmoil she experienced when her child developed health issues. Conventional medicine could not help, and from the depths of her despair, she experienced inner guidance that led her to an unconventional pathway for help: alternative medicine in Europe. Susan shares her story of courage, faith, spiritual lessons learned along the way in Indigo Wisdom, in the hope it will help others struggling in the face of adversity to find their connection to God and have the faith to follow. Well, what a story, Susan. When you first had your son, when did you discover that he had some problems?
Well, when pretty early on, I think that he was fairly nonverbal in his approach as an infant. I mean, I got to be trained to what his needs were. If he pretty much would just start shaking his hands and indicating distress when he was hungry, or even as a crawling toddler, he'd take himself over and sit in front of the microwave, and I knew that meant he was wanting a bottle. He never cooed, he never babbled, he never tried to say my name. So I expressed my concerns to the pediatrician, and I said, you know, because Gib had a pneumothorax — Gib is his nickname, I'm sorry — because he'd had a pneumothorax right at birth, I said to the doctor, unless you can swear up and down there was no brain damage done in that procedure, I want this kid tested. So I had him tested at 3, and that's when we discovered that he had a language impairment. But it seemed like things started to really roll downhill, because as soon as we started language therapy, and I was told he had childhood aphasia, then he started to weaken with his fine motor skills, and then I think by the time he was 4, we were starting to lose gross motor skills. So it was a very scary time of not understanding what was going on with this kid's, you know, health.
You talk about indigo blue children. Now tell us and explain this select group of children, this gifted, really, group of children.
Well, when he was in school, I had a friend that just kind of tossed a book at me and said, you need to read this, and it was about indigo children. So I read it, and basically when they were first playing around with Carillion photography and photographing body auras, there was a psychologist that was reviewing these films and noticed there was a whole group of children that had this common trait of having these indigo blue auras around their bodies. And so she got curious about what other attributes they might share and did a profile on them, and found that they tended to be sensitive, had learning disabilities, psychically gifted, maybe ADD, ADHD would be their diagnosis in school. And really, you know, it kind of helped me to consider that there might be something going on with him that was more of an energetic thing. So as he got healthier and began speaking, when his language abilities started to come through, he started to tell me of places that he'd go visit at night while he was sleeping, or he'd read my mind, or he'd tell me a premonition. And so it really kind of helped me understand him better.
Now, you talk about this memoir of the journey, this is your book, that you took from being a type A personality to a spiritually enlightened individual. What kind of a process did you go through?
I walked through the fires. Well, you know, I was the oldest child of five kids. You know, my dad was a successful executive. My mother was a stay-at-home, you know, get-her-done mom. She was always involved in, you know, club and church and all this. I just really always felt that if you wanted something, you just worked for it. And so I just threw all of my energy and ambition into getting my college degree and working. And, you know, I just, you know, was right on a track. You know, the materialistic, you know, goals that we all set for ourselves, and doing pretty well on that. And then all of a sudden, you know, I have this son. God gives me this son that isn't perfect. He didn't fit my profile. And I was forced to have to stop everything and address what his needs were. I mean, first of all, there's nothing more important than your child anyway. And whatever they need, you'd give them your right arm if it would help them. So I stopped to throw myself into trying to help him, and I was getting nowhere. And I finally became so emotionally distraught. I call it my fall to the knees moment, where you just have to submit a problem that's bigger than you to God because you don't know what else to do with it. You've exhausted everything else. So I said to God, there was obviously a reason he let my son live, and what was it? If there was anywhere in the world I needed to take him to get him help, I would do the work. I didn't expect the miracle. I just needed help in finding the path. And within days, I found out about a doctor in Switzerland who could rebuild the immune system using live cell therapy, which I pursued that path, and it had fabulous results. And once my son started to talk, and he started to talk about metaphysical things, this wasn't a household where he would hear this from. So that forced me to have to consider that whole genre of knowledge, and so I had to start reading and understanding and accepting him. And in the process, I learned how the Holy Spirit flows in every living thing, in everything in the universe, and flows through us. And it was that connection that I learned through that whole experience. So it was quite a transformation for me.
Most people don't want to deal with this word, adversity. They go, oh, no, not for me. And yet you say, without adversity, you don't have the opportunity for personal growth.
Yes, absolutely. Our priest said this one Sunday, and I just wanted to stand up and yell, yahoo, because he said a lot of times, out of adversity comes the blessing. And we don't get to see what that blessing is until the whole experience has run its course. So I do think that. I mean, I couldn't agree with that more.
And also, along with the heartbreak, you also talk about humor.
Well, that's what gets me through. Although I have to say, when my son was his sickest, and I couldn't find an answer, and I couldn't find my way, I really did lose my sense of humor. I can't believe I look back on it, and I probably went about 8 years without laughing, which is very unlike my character. So, you know, I just love humor. I think I'm funny.
Well, if we can't laugh, you know, someone said, someday we'll laugh about this, and the person said, well, why wait?
I told my husband back in the thick of our problems with our son, and then of course we had two other children, And I said, you know what, mister? I said, first the body went, and, oh, gosh, what was that? I can't remember the exact phrasing now. But anyway, the gist of it was, is I said, when my sense of humor is gone, buddy, I'm out of here. I tried to quit. I tried to quit motherhood. I told him one day I was turning in my resignation.
Yeah.
Well, he laughed. He said, I'm not accepting it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I mean, I can't even begin to understand, but it must be, there must be moments when you're faced with these kinds of challenges where, you know, the natural side of you would say, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I quit. Yeah.
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 I think we've all felt that, you know, where you get into something that you think, oh, this isn't what I bargained on. I want out of this. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of what childhood was for me, because I don't know what I thought it was, but, mm-hmm. I mean, having children. Because, boy, once I was into it, and you kind of lose all sense of who you were as a person, and then you end up becoming this new version of yourself, which, mm-hmm. you know, I gained in wisdom. I lost in other ways.
You asked this question for me to ask you. What was the pivotal moment in the book?
For me, the pivotal moment is when God starts answering my prayers in almost in whispers. Like if you weren't paying attention, you could even miss it. Just a quiet thought.
Yes.
That would come in that didn't follow your thought process at that moment.
Often called the still, small voice.
Yes, yes. And you understand, oh my God, it just makes my heart want to expand just talking about it. It just makes you understand that you're not alone, that there's this help that's there to be with you, to shoulder these burdens, that you've agreed to take on this lesson for whatever reason. But heaven hasn't abandoned you on it. But you have to ask.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? And most people often let their pride get in the way, and they don't ask.
And their egos won't let them because they think that, you know, they have to be the best person they can possibly be and do everything right. And they're being judged, and they're being watched. And, you know, it's more than that. It's a relationship. You know, and it's wonderful. When you understand that, it's just wonderful. It just opens your life up in ways that you never considered before, and it makes it so much more. So,
you talk about energy healing work.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I'm really passionate about that. I had a Reiki session with a friend.
Explain Reiki.
Oh, Reiki, Reiki is an ancient Asian energy practice of allowing the universal life force to flow and go where it's needed and bring in healing. And I had a friend that was a Reiki master, and so I thought, well, I'll try that. I trust her. I'll try that. And I ended up feeling very relaxed and complete after the session, and I really enjoyed it. But I also felt summoned to learn how to do it. And I thought, well, I should learn this. My dad was suffering with Parkinson's, and maybe at the very least I could help him with his Parkinson's problems, which he loved. Total skeptic, Mr. Automotive Engineer, proved to me how this is happening. I'm like, Dad, you calm down and you feel better after you've had this. Can't you just accept it as God's grace and go with that, you know? But then I just had that little voice telling me I needed to learn another modality. So I went to school in Grand Rapids and learned this energy touch healing modality that, you know, just really allows, you know, bigger in more complete healing sessions. So I have a practice and really enjoy the work. Really, really enjoy. I get to experience miracles all the time. So it's been exciting.
And an exciting road to building your faith.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, boy, if people could understand how God is in and of everything and that there's a connection there. And I think science is getting pretty close to, You know, I've been reading a lot about quantum physics and things that are being done with experiments to try to understand what's going on with the body and with energy, and we're just on the edge of a new paradigm, I think.
You have come a long way, haven't you?
Oh,
just a little
yeah.
light reading with quantum physics.
I know. Well, I had a couple of years ago, I had my dad, my mother, my brother, and a couple of best friends all die within a two-year period. So I call it the death capades, because that's all I was doing. It was like every 6 weeks there was something else happening, you know. And after that, and you kind of are in that depressed, let's process what just happened here, it was really a time for me to read, and I did read a lot of quantum physics to try to understand what in the heck, how can I explain what's going on. But I have to say that when you start understanding the energy of the soul and the dying process, and you get to even understand what a learning experience a death is, you know, what that does for you in terms of, you know, coming to understand the presence of God. And so even that was a blessing. As awful as it was to get through the death capades, it was really, really quite a learning experience for a lot of people. So,
Susan, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can order it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Borders.com. I've got a website, AuthorTopping.com, and I think there's one, SusanTopping.com, that tell you more about the book. But really, online is the best way to get it.
Well, Sue, thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. I've enjoyed our little coffee clatch here.
Susan Topping, the author of her book, Indigo Wisdom, A Personal Journey. And this interview was brought to you by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready for the Not-So-Soccer Mom Tuesday afternoons at 1 Eastern, noon Central on TogiNet with Jill Hickey. You name it, from politics to pop culture to Jill's search for the perfect bronzer and chicken salad. The Not-So-Soccer Mom will weigh in on it all. The sentence, "I have no opinion about that," is one that Jill has never uttered. In the early 90s, Jill finally decided to put her thoughts, opinions, mom advice, love of pop culture, hummus, and Starbucks, working out, cosmetic shopping, and politics into an actual website, and thus NotSoSoccerMom.com was born. Shortly after her fourth child, a boy, Jerome, now she's really got tons of topics to share with you. This is Laugh Out Loud Funny, and we're not kidding. What's a loud Nebraska girl who lived in Little Rock for many years and now is up in the Northeast doing? Chronicling her opinions on everything. The wheels aren't off yet, but it's close. It's the Not-So-Soccer Mom with Jill Hickey, Tuesday afternoons at 1 Eastern, noon Central, on TogiNet.com. Innovation and insight. Problems and solutions. Capitalizing on your ideas and efforts. That's all a part of Changing the World, One Invention at a Time, with Rick Rowe. Thursday evenings at 6, 5 Central, on TogiNet.com. Rick will be sharing stories of innovation, invention, inspiration, and overcoming obstacles with guests who have been there, done that, and are doing that. Rick will be asking the right questions, helping you identify the real problems, and showing you how to act on your ideas by increasing consumer confidence, and more importantly, increasing your confidence to act on your ideas. For even more information, go to ThinkTech, that's T-E-K, globally.com. Then join us as Rick and his guest teach us how to develop new ideas and create new products, new businesses, new jobs. And together, let's get our economy growing again. It's Changing the World, One Invention at a Time, with author and inventor Rick Rowe. Thursday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Passionate Encounters, and the author is Shireen Jabri, and Shireen joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this segment brought to you by AuthorHive. Hello, Shireen.
Hey, Steve, how are you doing?
Well, great to have you with us, and we're going to delve deeply into emotions, a woman's emotion, That should be interesting. But you have focused totally on this aspect of life about passion. I want to read a couple of things that you've written just to kind of help everyone set the stage so they know where we're coming from. You say this: set as a film in progress, enter the author's mind and journey to explore all the mishaps, delusions, ecstasy, lust, love, and tenderness as it lends a hand to discover a part of ourselves that have long forgotten. After all, passion is the only thread that ties it all together. You also say this: our feelings are what we are born with and the only thing we leave this world with. So we're going to focus on feelings, and this is done in such a unique way, and we'll get into that more and explain that to everyone. But first of all, Shireen, why go into an area where there are so many questions?
This is an interesting question because I think I've actually been wondering about this question since I was possibly 13 years old. I realized, like, we're talking with so many different people, that everybody you meet and anybody you meet, regardless of their gender, religion, or anything at all, or their likes or dislikes, or hobbies, they always seem to have somebody that's affected their life in a certain way that has really impacted their life, basically. Somebody they fell in love with, somebody that they shared a night of passion with that was more fiery than the rest, somebody that really made a dent in their life and perhaps helped to, you know, help them become the person that they are today. So I think really this is why, after like talking to so many friends and going through everything, I think this is why I was actually inspired to write this book. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's always about feelings. And it's become so much, I don't know how to tell you it, but it's become so focused and maximized, if you want. If you can imagine yourself holding a magnifying glass on the each feeling when you're falling in love with the person. And, you know, it goes from caring for them, and then from, you know, maybe it starts with the passion there, the ecstasy, the erotic part, and then develops into really caring for the person, you know. So there's so many things you come across. And I think it's the moments that you never forget. And I think everybody at one point is bound to relate to it one way or the other. And so I guess this is why I actually put it together and I came up with all of these stories. So, because I really think this is part of who we are. And some people like to talk about their feelings and show them. Some people don't. But I just think everybody has them, whether they choose to share them or not.
Well, we're going to have you read some examples to help us understand the chapters are written as takes, like in a film shoot, and then there's also sections called Sleeping with the Enemy, and there's a preface where two best friends are just discussing, I guess, their relationship or discussing how one person is viewing life. Why don't you share that with us and give everyone a better understanding of how you approach this?
Okay. Basically, it's about two best friends talking to each other and one best friend knowing the other person's general character traits and what she's bound to do over and over again, whether it's mistakes or good things. So do you want just to go ahead and read now?
Sure.
Yeah. So why are you still complaining? I don't get you. You got what you wanted, and suddenly it's not enough? She was my best friend, the one that kept me at bay. You know the kind that keeps you responsible and sensible. It's not enough, not now. What is it with you? You're never satisfied. The day I'm satisfied is the day I'll stop moving up, and what? Just explain to me. I'm not even close to where I need to be, so when the day comes, I will be satisfied. No, Sarah, don't forget, you can't bullshit me. It's me. Yeah, that was my best friend. She knew me more than I knew myself. Okay, fine, I chuckled. Big deal. So I'm not going to be satisfied that easily. Maybe that's my asset right there. Maybe without that, I wouldn't be determined. Sarah, she said. Her eyes used to stare at me as if they could read all my thoughts, even the ones I was just creating. That's no way to live your life. It's my way. We both said it at the same exact moment. It was times like this today, being so far away, that I missed the most. I leaned back in my chair at the cafe and held onto my cappuccino, which had served me and my best friend in all our talks of life, from childhood through adolescence and into pre-adulthood. Not everything can be your way. You know that more than anyone I know, but I still can't figure out why you're afraid of accepting that. So why? I just want too much. I don't know any other way. When it comes to what makes my world go around, I want it all. I need it all. Sarah, we've been here before. It's not just with your career. It's with everything else. And I've been trying my hardest to make you see that. Come on. It's my career. There was a pause. Don't begin all of this again. It was always like her. It was like she was following a manual, the How to Know Sarah in Every Detail in Any Situation manual. Perhaps it was simple. We grew up together. Perhaps that was enough. You're unbelievable. Laughing and with a smile as broad as daylight, I said, you're damn right there, and thanks for the compliment. I've always been unbelievable. Sarah, she laughed, I miss you. Really, I do. Maybe, just maybe. Tears filled my eyes. My cheeks grew warm, and I stared down my mug of cappuccino. I can't. When I looked up, there was an empty chair in front of me. My tears continued running down my cheeks, and there was nothing. I finally understood the meaning of feeling empty. It was a book I needed to rewrite, and the only one I couldn't.
So that's how the book starts with this, seems like, one of the questions you ask, who am I? Sounds like that one really kind of focuses on that whole big question.
I think the older you get and the more you mature and the more people you meet and the more people you interact with on the job and everything, sometimes you're confronted with certain things, whatever it is in life, or certain challenges at work or certain even personal challenges, that even though you know the foundation of who you are, you realize that, for instance, you can broaden the horizon a bit more and you discover that part of you much more. Whether it's in a job or it's like, you thought you probably couldn't handle doing this or that or finishing off this project, and you suddenly realize if you stretch your mind a bit further, actually you can handle it in the tight deadline. Or it's with people. Perhaps you think you can't help a friend you can help her, but maybe you don't know how to deal with death as such. And you feel like you can hold her hand, and you can listen to her, but you can't do enough for her. And then something happens and makes you realize that she's thanking you for what you've done. So perhaps you're pretty good at comforting her in the way that she needs to be comforted, as much as a person can be comforted at that point. So I think you always, you always discover a new part of yourself. And I think if you always leave that part open, that there's new things that you'll discover of yourself, there's new things that you may be able to do that you're unaware of, I think that makes things so much more interesting for you and maybe others around you as well.
Well, let's jump into the takes. You say you wanted to write about the positive experiences of passion in the first 50 takes. So there are 50 takes. It's like a film shoot. And we're going to have you read one of those takes. Which number is this?
This is take 14.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I never knew that I could have rocked your heart back and forth violently, that I could have caused you hurt so deep that it numbed part of your heart. Years, many years later, I smile in recognition of the love that we both endured with the light of a flame unknown to mankind. The love that set our hearts aflame with passion and a desire that secured our lives in ways unimaginable. In memory of our love, you are the pivot on which the balance is attached. Serene, genuine, and a genius. Not in your inventions, but in romance, in your passionate embrace, in your compassion that moves mountains and drains water from the ocean, in being just you. Almost a decade later, and at 19, you were a man before a boy. In uniting with your best friend, you became a man in your patience, in your dependable character of sincerity, in your tolerance of a love that crucified you as well as crowned you king. We walked the path of destiny for approximately 2 of our 26 years alive. That path, until this day, is intoxicated with the most revitalizing flowers, arrangements of the sweetest, most elegantly scented roses, inhabited with the most intensely electrifying moments of our lives. Enduring our love, We cast a hurricane at those dear souls. We rained a strong wind of defiance on any person who questioned our love for another. Failing to realize that those dearest to us only wanted what was best for us in light of their own experiences and beliefs. Ironically, in that passage of time, we never understood our parents' well-coded language. Now, and with a cold, piercing shower of maturity, I know the reason for their elusive, strict behavior, their mistrust of a relationship that they somehow failed to wreck. Believing that our love was like a ship of adventure for youngsters, they tried one too many times to pull the ship back to harbor. And when all else failed and the Titanic ship remained rooted and solid, they jumped into using the might of their words, highlighting even the weapons hidden behind their shields. Each family threw down their shields and struck while the iron was hot, where it hurt most. As they struck, their prime attempt was to strip the other family from its historic pride and respect, never halting even once to realize that their actions bore resemblance to hunters hunting for their prey. The reason why comprehending our love was blindly impossible was simple. Our bullhorned resistance to yield to their demands, our consumption with one another, both crucified and crowned us as counterparts, king and queen. Our parents weren't sailors upon that ship, and they never spent the good hours of their days climbing the rockiest yet most seductive of mountains. Instead, they succumbed, even surrendered, to what they had been told to parrot in their childhoods. Tears stinging my eyes, I surrendered to the man of my past. I surrendered to our memories, and as I walked across my bedroom, lost in thoughts of a past unlike any other, I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. That's when it hit me, the importance of loving a boy who became a man before he became a boy. My first love consumed me and purified me. It purified love in my eyes, placed heaven on earth, and leapt out of its path to hug me with its smothering warmth, the warmth that contributed to the woman I became. And with that, I finally, years later, bid my first love its farewell. As an afterthought, I sent him a kiss of forgiveness, a kiss of sacrifice, and a kiss from his ex-partner. That's it.
Well, as you put it, your book is a manifestation of feelings, and that certainly was a great example of this complete, not a how-to guide or a character play-out romance book or a philosophical look at passion. It's a manifestation of feelings, right?
Yep, that's pretty much it. Exactly, it's actually.
And you want the readers to touch base with these feelings out of their own feelings and passions and regrets and their experiences.
Yeah, I mean, what I did, the reason I split the book up almost, if you like, into two parts, is that the first 50 takes are the positive aspects of passion. So whether it's romance, ecstasy, compassion, even a sense of sincere kindness, or anything that comes from the positive side. And those were written as takes, like from a scene from a film. And the other ones, throughout the book, there's chapters that I call Sleeping with the Enemy. Now, the difference between those two is in the takes, it's always a man and a woman. And I never really describe the characters or even give them names. And they're all separate stories. It's just always a man and a woman because I wanted people to just, you know, readers to just basically focus on the experiences more than the actual characters and what they do and what they like and what they don't like and how they react to things. And with Sleeping with the Enemy, it's focusing on the negative sides of passion, of having this fiery passion between two people. So whether it's the chapters are based on envy, jealousy, all those extremes, maybe a touch of hatred as well, and, you know, how sometimes those kind of feelings develop when you have too much of when the passion is too consuming and it goes to a negative, it takes a negative path. And there I basically had one character, and it's her reactions continuously in all of these chapters to these incidences, to this thing, because I thought perhaps it's easier, because it's a bit like life, if you think about it. It's easier to relate. You have a lot of positive around you, but every once in a while, there's going to be some dark moments there. And it's easier to relate to that if you can imagine that it's one person and how they react to that situation as it unfolds. So it's her and her reaction to the man and all these these anger feelings or all these, you know, destructive feelings coming about from the passion. So this is how I kind of, well, this is the way I phrased the whole book, if you can say that. Yeah.
And you also have a song was written.
Yeah. Actually, that was a funny story because when I thought of Passionate Encounters, I thought to myself, because of the subject matter of the book, I thought it would be really great if it had a song to be, you know, if a song would be composed, because especially it's romantic. So if there's a song that you can do, if you have lyrics or if you sing it in an opera-like fashion, and if you have a lot of saxophone there and can actually address all that romance that happens around things or the elegant candlelight dinners and everything. And so I was in New York, and I was sitting there thinking to myself, how can I, because I didn't know anybody in the music industry, how would I find people that can actually compose it from scratch for me and just capture the exact elements I wanted to capture? And obviously, I love to listen to music, but I would never know about how to compose and put the songs together or anything. And I was passing by Central Park. I took this, like, bicycle tour with a tour guide, and I can't remember the name of the fountain in the center of Central Park, but it's under a bridge. And he told me, go down for 5 minutes and stroll around. And this is a famous fountain and all of this. So it was an afternoon, and I just was strolling down. And then in the first, like, few minutes, I saw a group, like an almost an opera sort of choir group. And it seemed like they were a family, African-American family. And they were replaying. They were actually did a replay of a classic love song, You're So Beautiful to Me, but in an opera-like fashion. And then I could even hear the violin, and I can hear the saxophone. And the voices were so beautiful that in the first, like, 5 minutes, it brought tears in my eyes because it just affects you. It reminds you of either the person you once loved, or it reminds you of certain moments when you least expect them, when you just hear that kind of melody in the background. And then that's when I knew. I thought, that's it. I have to approach, you know, these people and see if they can actually compose a song for me, because this is exactly what my book is about. I want people to listen to a song. I want it to affect them in that way, or at least to, you know, it's that kind of passionate expression through music, this kind of love or this kind of romance or this kind of nostalgia. And yeah, and then I found there was a girl there, and she was basically giving out leaflets. So I approached her and I asked her, I told her, listen, you know, Is this part of a tourism thing, or is this, I mean, are you guys a family? Because it looked like they were a family, brothers and sisters, different ages, and the father was there and everything. And she told me, no, it's my dad, and basically it was the Boys for Praise Company, Songs for Praise Company, and the guy's name is John Boyd, and we got to talking. She gave me his mobile number. We met a couple of weeks later, and he got to reading quite a few chapters of the book, and amazingly enough, he called in a really good composer, Dennis Witherspoon, and he had to fly him down from Georgia, and basically we just sat together. It was really amazing. It was the first time that I sat on a song from scratch getting composed, or getting put together and everything. I found it really interesting, and I was amazed, and I think one of the best moments was at the end when we're in the studio in New York. And basically just sitting behind the scene, watching them sing the whole thing through. And then they gave me the headphones, they replayed it for me, and they're waiting for my approval. They're waiting to see if this is what I wanted. And I remember really so happy. I was just so happy in that moment. I thought, my God, this is exactly it. And now it's finally done and put together. And so just really, it's a great feeling. That's what I can say.
And everyone can go to your website and hear Passionate Encounters, Consuming Fire. And your website is?
www.shireenjabri.com.
That's shireenjabri.com. Shireen, you also have a book painting.
That came about by complete chance. I was with one of my best friends, and we went to a music festival in Pennsylvania. Actually, around the same time, like this last year, May 2010. And basically what happened is I came across this really great stand with modern art paintings there and some melodies in the background. And I spoke to the actual artist, and as it turns out, he drums his pieces of work and he records the melody for the creation of his painting, which I thought was a really great idea. It's a way of thinking out of the box, which I immediately admired. And so later on, I asked him if he could actually, you know, create a painting for the book that captures the two main tones, which is, well, if you're going to go very basic, love and hatred. And he was able to capture them in this really, actually amazing modern art painting of a heart. And it actually captures every part of this, you know, there's many shadows and space and everything to capture the separation between people when it works in a relationship and when it doesn't. And all the passion and love and the colors that he uses and everything. So, and it was really great. And his name is Georges Lehoop. And if you actually go to his website on YouTube, and you see him creating a painting, it's amazing to watch. And I actually, the reason I went with this painting is because I thought, brilliant. I mean, there's a guy, it's obvious that he's into passion, and that was really an important part. And he had a lot of passion for what he's doing. And this is the basis of my book, to have passion for what you do generally. And so I went along with it, and it turned out really well. It's also on my website.
Shireen, we appreciate your time with us and for explaining Passionate Encounters. Tell us how to get your book.
You can get my book from www.iuniverse.com, or you can go on my website, and if you go under the webpage entitled Buy, you can actually buy it from Amazon. There's a link for Amazon. There's a link for Barnes & Noble. There's a link for Borders, and it's also in Waterstones in London and whsmith.co.uk. Or alternatively, you can just go to the site straight away, Amazon, and just search for it, and it will come up.
Again, the title of the book is Passionate Encounters, and the author is Shireen Jabri. Thank you so much, Shireen, for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure.
This is Indie Book Publishing, and this special segment is brought to you by AuthorHive.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com.
Youth was sad, right? Cause he had a death, dear mommy and dad, right? But that ain't the case, nope. It wasn't his fate, nope. The Wands never struggled to communicate, ha. Y'all wave your hands, look who's on, yep. It's Dakota Man Keith, and he's number one.
It's That Keith Wand Show on TogiNet.com, Wednesday nights at 8, 7 Central. Every week, That Keith Wand Show will have guests that share their experiences, expertise, opinions, and personal lives with us to hopefully help us better understand others. The topics and guests will come from the American Sign Language community. For more on Keith Wand and the show, go to his website, KeithWand.com. Listen with an open mind and willingness to learn and help with the cultural bridge.
Number one, Keith's number one. Everybody clap because the Dakota Man's on. Number one, Keith's number one. Everybody clap because the Dakota Man's on.
Don't miss That Keith Wand Show, Wednesday nights at 8, 7 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Snatched from the Jaws of the Enemy, How God, Our Mighty Warrior, Rescues Us. And the author is Dr. William Shepherd. And Dr. Shepherd joins us now on this special segment of Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Westbo. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Steve.
Good to have you with us. I'm going to read what you have written to set the stage for our discussion, a very meaningful discussion. You say this, Snatched from the Jaws of the Enemy is about a journey in knowing God. It is easy to miss the purpose of what Christianity is about, knowing God. There is an enemy of our soul who wants to make sure we miss that purpose by distorting or destroying the truth of who God is. This book will start you on a personal journey in knowing him in a way he desires for us to know him. Well, this is obviously one of the greatest discoveries that man can have, right? Knowing God.
That's right. That's right. That's what I have found out in my journey.
And your journey started with a special experience watching television.
Yes. My wife and I just gave birth to our first child, a daughter. And a lot of questions were going through my mind. I hadn't had any religious background to speak of. And I didn't like where my life was headed. And all of a sudden, here I'm responsible for another human being, a daughter. And I had visions of some of the girls that I had seen before. And so my wife had to stay in the hospital, and I went on home. And while I was there, this overwhelming weight was upon my shoulders about what am I going to tell her? What am I going to give her? I can't give her $1 million. And I went through the list. And while I was thinking that, I turned on the television. To that date, I had never watched a religious broadcast on television. And up pops Billy Graham. Well, from the very moment that I saw it, I was my attention was grabbed by what he was saying. And when he was looking to that television, it's like he was having a personal conversation with me. And through his sermon, I really couldn't tell you exactly what the sermon was about, but I could tell he was really touching my heart. And all of a sudden, I found him looking into the camera and inviting me to accept Jesus Christ into my heart. And before I knew it, I found myself on my knees, not knowing what I was doing. I just was responding automatically to what he had said. And for the first time in my life, I bowed and accepted Christ as my Savior. And he told me to, in the broadcast, to go and to seek a place where you can get to know God and to understand more fully. Well, that's where I was left. I was there home by myself, and I got up from my knees, just startled what I had done. I went to the front door, opened it up, looked out into the heavens, and saw the stars really for the first time in my life. And I just began talking to God, and I'd never done that before. And I said, just no matter what, I don't know what I just did. I pray that you'll please help me, and please don't let me take a form of religion to where I would be like a hypocrite and bring disgrace to you. Just please guide me. I follow you. I don't know where I'm going, but please lead me. And pretty much that summarizes what took place there. And for some reason, inside me came this overwhelming desire to go down to the tallest building in Eureka, California, and climb up there and to begin shouting, guess what I have discovered? I didn't even yes. really know
you were
what
excited.
I discovered.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Some meaning,
really quite an experience.
Some meaning to your life and some direction. And since then, 33 years of professional experience as a pastor, as a professor of theology and practical religion. You have a doctorate of ministry. I mean, you have been a counselor. Your life has been filled with service. And now this book.
Yes.
Why did you write
yes.
the book?
Well, I was first inspired by a gentleman who said, whatever you do, don't die with your song left in you. I can't even quote who it was. I just know that it just overwhelmed me because there were so many things that I was discovering about God, and the journey that I took was taking me in different directions in my religious experience. And I just didn't like the direction it was taking because it seemed like it was leading me in the form that reminded me of my prayer when I first gave my life to him. Please help me keep from being a hypocrite. I didn't want to play act. I wanted to be sincere. So I found myself following more form and focusing on minutia, and I found myself in a place to where I really didn't know him. And so I went back trying to understand the focus of what Scripture is all about. And that has led me into understanding God's names. And the focus of the book is getting to know him as he desires, and that is through an understanding of his character. And this is most vividly portrayed through the understanding of his names as we go through Scripture. And I want to emphasize, this is not the only way to know him, but for me, it was such an intriguing insight, and Scripture just opened up like a flower in bloom, and it was so fragrant, so beautiful, that I've just done a study on the names of God.
And we're talking names, plural. Why is that important?
Well, it's like the character of God is so wide, so deep, so beautiful. No one description, no name can describe that. And I loved the a prayer that I heard. Said, "Oh Father, please break up for me the brightness of your glory into hues that I can understand and grasp." And I saw it like holding a diamond up to the sun. I couldn't look at the sun, but the incredible beauty that came through that prism of the diamond, I saw all kinds of colors that I didn't know was there before. And that pretty much summarizes what I found out through his names. Each name is a promise. Each name is a description of how he acted in men's lives, trying to help us understand all the various facets and various people that are on the face of the earth, that there's not a situation we can get into, but what God has already made provision. And so I look at those various names, and it's just interesting to look at the context. And when I see that name, it describes something God will do, and it becomes a promise to me if I find myself in that situation.
Give us an example of one of those promises.
Okay. When I look at, for instance, in the life of Abraham, Yahweh Jireh is the name that is there. And we look at the entire life of Abraham building up to that greatest climax and the greatest challenge that was given to any human being. And that was, God was asking him to do something that was so contrary to the entire world. In fact, something that he had prohibited, and to sacrifice his son. And when I see that, it wasn't that God was playing with Abraham. God wants us to be able to look into the depths of his heart to see how serious, how deep is his commitment to us. And it seems like he takes life situations to that cause us to question everything about ourselves. And in that moment, he brings home a lesson. And the name Yahweh Jireh, God will provide. And here was Abraham, laden with sin, wondering what God was going to do to restore man. And through that story, God opened up his heart to where finally Abraham understood something about the character of God that he never did before. All of his trying and efforts to try to work his own way there finally came to the understanding God is enough. God will provide, that his salvation, the way he has done, is enough. And so I look at that when I find myself struggling to try to make it, and to be reminded it's not about me. It's about my Father and the provision that he has made. And so I often use that name in my own prayer life, Yahweh Jireh. God will provide.
You say there are people who look at the chaos in the Christian world today, people who are not a believer, and it doesn't look very attractive. Everyone seems to be pointing their fingers at each other, and theirs is the only way to God. You ask the question, what happened to Christ's statement that we shall be one?
Yes. And I really was writing it from my perspective and my journey, because as I looked at Christianity, I heard so many claims and people saying this is the way and this is the only way and this is what you must do. I was so confused. I wanted to have nothing to do with religion. And the little I knew about Christianity, knowing that God is going to bring us to that place to where we understand, and that rallying point is not some special unique belief. It is about the character of God. And it seems like religion, sometimes with all of the various denominations, there is so much well-meaning effort, but we find that many times we can get in that environment and we find out that we're trying to focus on some unique belief, and many times it has nothing to do with the central focus of religion, and that is getting to know the Father. It may be a belief about baptism, it may be a belief about a day, it may be a belief about form of worship, and we will absolutely divide ourselves from each other over some belief that all God was trying to do was to introduce himself to us. And so I think that it has created a lot of chaos in Christianity that makes it unappealing, because how am I going to choose among 1,500 different religions? Most of them have their own unique belief system, and figure out for myself, which way shall I go? And I found out that the way I'll go, this is life eternal, to know him, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. And so that has been my theme.
And of course, there is the enemy.
Yes. He wants to do everything he can to cast his own character upon the Heavenly Father, so that we will be distorted in our understanding and confused as to what he wants for us. And so the jaws of the enemy are the lies that come out of the mouth of the devil to try to distort our image of God, to make him a cruel, unforgiving, unkind, unloving, demanding. And I think it's just absolutely repulsive.
And so many people are searching for peace, and yet there's so many debasing and destructive paths to follow.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I could cite several things, especially in today's society, individuals setting times and individuals emphasizing the hate and all kinds of things, and how we can turn upon one another, and we are brothers and sisters in Christ, and to turn upon ourselves, we become a shame to the world.
The title of the book, Snatched from the Jaws of the Enemy, How God, Our Mighty Warrior, Rescues Us. Well, Dr. Shepherd, tell us how to get your book.
Well, there are several ways. We have it on Amazon.com. We have it in a number of Christian bookstores. And I have a website where the book can be purchased. It's through UCCSolutions.com. And in there it tells a little bit about myself and about the book and some of the things that we're doing here and some of the seminars that we go around and hold. So We try to make it as readily available as possible. Amazon is probably one of the quickest. You can get it through the book form or the Kindle, or pretty soon we're going to be coming out with a oral presentation of it so they can get it on a CD and listen to it that way.
Well, thank you, Dr. Shepherd. Thanks for the explanation and your insights. Appreciate you being with us.
Steve, very kind. Thank you very much for the time.
Dr. William Shepherd, author of his book, Snatched from the Jaws of the Enemy, How God, Our Mighty Warrior, Rescues Us. And this segment of Indie Book Publishing is brought to you by Westbow.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.